are listening to a free version of The Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is a Matt and Mike Casual Friday, May 30th, 2014. My name is Matt Binder.
I'm Michael Brooks.
And this is the three-time award-winning
The Majority Report.
We are broadcasting to you live in the literal, but not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building.
In the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. On today's program, Cliff Schechter.
The Schechter.
We're going to be talking about, well, the gun crisis in America, debunking more lies that need to be debunked. We're going to talk about why the Republicans should be running scared on the ACA and Obama's FARB policy address.
I'm sorry, I'm making Michael laugh here.
It's funny.
Because
inside jokes, there are inside jokes that exist, my friends. We can't make you privy to all of them, but that was pretty funny. Also,
and our favorite joke of all will be joining us today, Phil Madmather.
Wow.
No, I love Phil Madmather. No.
Feisty little Binder today.
No.
God damn.
We got film guy Matthew Weiss, who is by far, hands down, our best film suggestion guy. Easily. And he will be joining us today. And as usual, when we talk with Matthew Film Guy on a Matt and Mike Friday, I'll be talking with him a lot about what television shows I'm watching, as opposed to whatever movie he suggests to us that I won't be watching.
Wow, throwing down the gauntlet. I'll probably, we'll have a night. We'll have a great conversation with him. And then I cannot give you any more than this. But we will be having a celebrity. I would call him some type of celebrity guest. I cannot reveal the name.
In studio.
Pretty excited about this. So
we got this. We reached out to this person, and there's some
kind of connections, whatever, that we were able to finagle. But it's going to be very fun for you.
They feel very strongly about this show.
Yeah, it's far out. Actually, we're going to keep it a secret until it happens. But after Film Guy Matthew, a special guest. Really briefly, the reason Sam again is not in studio today is because he's putting together his new radio show, which is going to start, I actually believe it's this Monday.
It's been promoted as this Monday.
It's a figure of speech.
Yes, yes.
Anyways, it's going
to
be...
So for all you new Majority Report listeners, yes, which we know.
Yeah, we know. We've been seeing the numbers.
We've been seeing the numbers. There's new listeners to the show. I am Matt Binder.
I'm Michael Brooks.
We are Majority Report producers and contributors.
And the hosts of Matt and Mike Days.
Matt and Mike.
Is going to be happening every Monday on this show. Sam will be back on Tuesday to take you through. We're running a touch behind, so we need to get to Cliff in a second. But the other news just to mention is obviously Eric Shinseki, the head of the VA, was just let go by President Obama. There's a lot more to talk about on that story. And we will obviously talk more about it, but that's the late breaking news on it. We're going to take a brief break. Get back with Cliff Schechter. Thanks for listening, everybody.
And it's a protege, eh? Chronics are where you say, eh? I'm pleased to be chilling in the West Indies. I provide all my wants and needs. I got the sunshine, rivers, and trees. We leave.
when me see John, me see a way. Drastically straight from hypocrisy, I say, hey. Every man to them own a philosophy. I live the proper way and then me read a chapter daily. Monday in a city hungry and no eat. And food they down a country, does a drop off of the tree then. You see, say poverty no real then, is what the reasoning revealing.
To my friends and foes, and I suppose I'm pleased to be chilling in the West Indies. I provide all my wants and needs. I got the sunshine, rivers and trees. Really, yeah.
When the rain pits up at 20 roof, herb just a steam pepper pot 20 stew. Life is a dream if you got gratitude. So go tell the regime them can't stop where we do now. Information you think on your own, or else you're a slave to the things that you know. What do you know if you learn every day? So be careful of things where you say.
Who knows, who knows, who knows, who knows. I just go where the shaping blows, sending love to my friends and foes. And I suppose I'm pleased to be chilling in the West Indies. I provide all my wants and needs. The sunshine, rivers and trees, green leaves.
Africa in our soul, but a Jah in our heart. It is of importance.
Welcome back.
My name is Matt Binder.
I am Michael Brooks. This is the Majority Report. Joining us now, and of course before he formally joins us, his theme song will be joining us, the great political strategist, political maestro, and weekly guest, Cliff Schechter.
Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC, New Media, Public Relations, and Strategy. You want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC.
.com.
Did I hear you singing along there, Michael?
You did. I was humming along.
You got good stuff going on there, baby.
I appreciate it. It's all to honor you. So Cliff.
Yes.
I feel like you wrote a piece for the Daily Beast called "How the Gun Nuts Try to Excuse the Santa Barbara Slaughter and Why They're Wrong," and there was something that struck me in reading this column and in thinking about this latest, you know, this latest gun catastrophe and the reality that there is, as you say, there's a domestic arms industry and the politicians that are beholden to them that feel absolutely comfortable with the body count just kind of increasing exponentially and not doing anything about it. And for all of the cultural and historical nonsense explanations, there's a fundamental profit motive behind what's going on here. And I want to run down what you did in this article, because I think even if we're talking to audiences of people who are probably fairly convinced on the gun issue, these are the myths that this industry has us living by, right? Like literally, these are myths that we're living and dying by. If we're going to ban guns, let's ban knives. Let's ban cars.
Right.
Take us through these arguments. Explain why they're nonsense and re-anchor us in what is actually driving these insane gun policies that we're living and dying under.
So, yeah, I mean, they basically have spent 40 years now kind of repeating the same catch phrases, the same slogans, offering up the same BS. They learned from, you know, what numerous other right group, well, let's not call them right wing groups, but groups that became right wing groups learned along the way who wanted to make a profit. I mean, the best example, of course, is the tobacco industry,
right.
Who, you know, if you could sort of, as they called it, manufacture doubt in people, if you could create your own fake studies, if you could give people so people could rely on those, if you could give people talking points that have no real basis in reality, but get them out there, either academics who you corrupt, people in the media, everyday people in the grassroots, and that obviously has become much more important in the age of social media than it even was back then. then you can extend the window while your product, which everybody who is relying upon sound science knows is simply killing people, you can extend that window for perhaps decades. I mean, they knew that tobacco was addictive and it was causing cancer in the 50s and 60s. Think about how long it took us to really do anything about it. And the NRA certainly learned from that. I mean, you see it now with what's going on in global warming. You know, the oil companies, if they can make that a partisan issue, one where there's a he said and a she said, you know, I don't know if you saw the thing, the bit that John Oliver did on it the other night.
I did.
Was fantastic because that you don't ever get that. I mean, he did what it always should be. Generally what you get is one person arguing with one other person. Instead, he said, well, 97% of scientists accept this. That this is reality, so why don't we have 97 people in the room argue against 3 people, because that would be a more accurate showing. And on the gun issue, it's the same thing. I mean, if it's background checks, you should get 90 people in a room arguing against 10. You know, I mean, if you want, that's if you just want people. If you want to get the scientific studies, it would probably be about the same as the ones on global warming. And so they've created this situation where they act like there's equal weight to people who've been proven to be frauds. I wrote 2 pieces actually, and that second one that you're referring to was kind of a response to my first one, because my first one was just on how the NRA enables these kinds of massacres. And I got the usual responses from the Breitbart flying monkeys, who are always fun to deal with. They kind of make me laugh. And others on the right, who tried to denounce the piece and question it, and say that it was a lie and this and that. And so I decided, with all the responses they came at me with, you know, this would be a good primer for people to see that this stuff's crap. You know, that they come at you with the same.
So Cliff, this is exactly right. And I think that that's so important, that anytime you're talking guns or you're talking global warming, you have to go back to the tobacco industry, the corruption of science, and how objective public health and science issues turn into PR issues at the behest of venial industries. Absolutely.
So right, what they turn it into an actually identifying issue culturally for those on the right. So it's no longer just a belief. It's a belief system that you're questioning.
Right, and a cultural and a brand. I don't believe in climate. I don't believe in public safety with guns. And I listen to a certain type of music and buy a certain type of beer. It's a consumer preference and a cultural story. Let's run through the 3. So let's lay it out. If you're going to ban guns, you need to ban cars and knives, because they can also be used to kill people. And indeed, this despicable kid in Santa Barbara did in fact use knives and cars to harm people. Let's run through that. The other myth is, well, California has supposedly tough gun laws. So doesn't that show you that tough gun laws don't work? All of these myths that, again, myths that we live and die by, and if they're not kind of exposed and aggressively called out, their frames are going to settle in and they're going to cloud the water. So explain why those arguments are ludicrous. Break them down.
Right. And so let me make sure also, I took on 3 arguments. One of them was a very general one. I went into the whole thing about, well, people kill people. And that's one they use, you know, all the time. Guns don't kill people. People do. We'll get to that in a second. But I want to make sure people understand.
So let's not give people frigging assault weapons. But anyways, go ahead.
Oh, yeah. Well, okay, so the first one you brought up was knives and automobiles. And the reason that's an important one, because that's specific to this case, because he used a knife and he used an automobile. But you'll often hear, when you get in a more general argument, people say, well, why don't we just ban hammers? They kill people. Why don't we just – so this is really for any other – tool out there for anything else that kills people, whether accidentally or here and there. First of all, so here's the key thing. Going into knives, clearly a knife, like an automobile, like a hammer, like these other objects, have other purposes than to kill. They do other things. They do not solely exist to kill. But beyond that, with a knife, it's almost sort of a common sense thing. Clearly, as I put there in the piece, you don't hear about drive-by knifings, okay? We didn't storm Omaha Beach by throwing knives. guns can more accurately kill. They can kill from further away. They can kill in a much more impersonal way, so you don't have to look in the people's eyes when you do it. It's a dot, you know, that you're
right.
looking at through your scope or who you're running by quickly in your car. It's a complete, so obviously a lot more people with a lot more accuracy, a lot more dangerous. The numbers don't even come close to matching up in terms of, now you're now talking about 80 something, you know, 1,000 people, who are dying per year. So, okay, so nothing comparable between guns and knives. With automobiles, it's clearly even a more interesting one, because these people walk right into something they don't even get, which is automobiles did used to kill a lot more people. There used to be a lot more traffic fatalities, a lot more
right.
highway accidents. And so we responded to that like a public health crisis, the way we would be if we didn't have a right-wing group blocking us on guns, which was to say, this has got to stop. So what did we do? We had these guys make cars that don't flip over as easily.
Right.
We got seat belts put in cars and required child safe seats to make fewer children die in car accidents. When people go around like GM and they're making cars that blow up, we hold them accountable, which the gun industry passed an immunity bill through Congress in 2004 to make sure they're not held accountable.
Right.
People have to get personal liability insurance. Whereas when some people out there accidentally shoot people, we pick up the bill. They don't pick up the bill for that. We also, of course, have people take tests. You have to take a written test. You have to take a performance test to show you know what you're doing. We register cars. We license people so we can track them. These are all things. And then, of course, there's the whole element of drunk driving, where we decided to actually declare a war of sorts on it. Now,
and
no
our freedom
are,
has never recovered from it. I mean, you know,
freedom was never the same in America.
Well, I know for us sort of socialists here on the Majority Report, that doesn't matter. But for real red-blooded Americans, they care about that sort of thing.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, look, I mean, we've all been stopped, I'm sure, at checkpoints before because
yes.
there are random checkpoints. The equivalent, I would say, of a background check to
Absolutely.
Make sure that people are not driving drunk and aren't going to hurt people. Bartenders that keep serving people that are wasted are held responsible. If they get in an accident, they're held responsible for cutting people off.
Maoism.
Huge prison sentences
yeah.
for people who drunk drive.
Right.
Look at all of what we did. And you know what all that accomplished, Michael? What all that accomplished is that traffic fatalities have been plummeting. Well, gun deaths have been skyrocketing, and in 2015, it's predicted we'll have the first year where more people will die due to guns than due to cars.
Absolutely.
So you've got two opposite trends going on there. So bringing up automobiles is just dumb, because obviously somebody can take an automobile out and kill people, but we've done everything possible in that instance, and if we think of new things, we'll do that to try to limit it. With knives, same thing. There are a lot of regulations when it comes to machetes and knives that are made really for killing. But, I mean, you know, there are knives that are used for cutting your food. And clearly, again, it's a red herring because nobody can knife somebody from 100 feet away. People can't go up into a book depository or, if you will, a grassy knoll, depending on your beliefs, and kill a president of the United States with a knife. You know, we're talking about something that is entirely different.
And it's also, in many cases, I mean, frankly, harder to get something like a switchblade than get a gun. I mean, that is the kind of astonishing, and the car example is the perfect example, because you open up this conversation where first, as you're saying, it's a category difference, because guns and cars are not the same thing, obviously, unless maybe some of these people use guns as like coffee coasters or something. I have no idea what goes on in some of these people's homes. But and then get to the before we I think that there's two other points well, before we yeah get to the people kill people argument. I mean, you know,
right.
it sounds
and
so
I also
ludicrous.
Want to just make a quick point, because, you know, which I didn't mention, which I do in this piece, were two incidents that I brought up. One of them, it's almost, you know, it sadly is almost perfectly comparable, because on the same day as Newtown happened
yeah.
in Henan province in China, a crazed man walked into a classroom and started stabbing children. He stabbed 23 children. Every single one of them lived. Okay, while 26 people were killed at Newtown, including 20 little kids. And more recently in Pittsburgh, I believe it was in April or March or April, maybe February, a crazed kid walked into a school also with a knife. He stabbed 22 people. Every single one of them lived. So again, it's not to say that it's not terrible that anybody dies from a stabbing. My heart goes out to those three innocent people. They were killed by, you know, were stabbed to death by this crazy, this lunatic in Santa Barbara, the same way as all of those who were shot. It's just to say that that there's no comparison between what a gun can do and what a knife can do.
Of course. So, okay, so people kill people. What, I mean, it sounds so fatuous,
right,
and disingenuous in and of itself, but this does get kind of trotted out. I mean, isn't the obvious answer then, so, okay, so people kill people, so therefore shouldn't we want to be aware of and monitor what the psychological and emotional state is of somebody who is acquiring a weapon of mass destruction or minimal,
right,
or, you know, or
which is, yeah. I mean, call it whatever you want, but when you can, yeah, mow down a movie theater the way that guy did in Aurora, that's a weapon of mass
destruction. That's absolutely a weapon of mass, of course.
And yeah, right, on a 110 or 100 bullet drum magazine, you know, I mean, so yes, the you hit the nail on the head with, you know, with that one too. You know, you've got people who can get this kind of weaponry, and the NRA says, well, it's not the weaponry, it's just the people who are using it. First of all, obviously, I don't accept that claim. That's bogus anyhow, because whoever that person is, if they're using something with 100 bullets versus something with 10 bullets, they can do a lot more damage. It is regulating guns. It is taking military-style weapons off the street. It is returning to a time pre the 1980s, which most people don't even know it, that in this country, when military weaponry was not available to almost anybody, and when concealed carry was something that existed in a couple states. It's this assumption that you know, when you're talking about these people, well, people are human beings who have tempers and who do stupid things accidentally. And when they do those things in public, those of us who never signed up for their agenda get killed.
That's right.
And so there's that aspect to it. But okay, for a second, let's accept the NRA's tortured logic, right? That it's people who kill people. Well, if you do accept that, then why wouldn't you want to do background checks on those people?
Right.
Right? I mean, we're not doing a background check on the gun. We're doing a background check on the person. We're making sure they are mentally stable. We're making sure they are not a criminal. As I brought up earlier, if it's the person who we need to be held responsible, who needs to have accountability, not the gun, why wouldn't we make them get personal liability insurance and pay the price for their actions? I mean, these are just common sense things. Why would the NRA be against that? And the answer to that is, it's just a slogan. It's a bunch of crap. They don't believe in that. It's a way of getting out of responsibility and doing exactly what we said, selling more guns. Because like tobacco and oil, it's a product. They make money off of it. End of story. Second Amendment, convenient excuse. You know, and so that's what we're talking about here. They found something, you know, in the Constitution that talked about states protecting themselves when we had no standing army with militias from both danger of revolt in the cases of the Shays Rebellion and the Whiskey Rebellion, or being attacked by outside forces like the British, which has absolutely nothing to do with somebody having an assault weapon to walk down the streets of New York today.
Exactly.
Not
right.
Related.
And finally, I just want to hit this before we wrap guns up, because the final myth that you touched on, that again, it seems so obvious if you took just a few minutes to do a little bit of deductive reasoning, but you're going to hear this a lot too. California had tough gun laws. This still happened, you know, because this is when the conversation flips. It goes from, this will destroy our freedom, this is, you know, then you have to ban knives and cars and blah, blah, blah. And then you have the kind of world-weary, smug, cynical, disingenuous, like, oh, well, I mean, this, you know, these gun controls don't even work anyways.
Right.
So
it doesn't work.
Knock,
I mean,
that out.
Which did you see the, I'll start with just if you saw the headline in The Onion, which was, you know, country says gun law, that this can't be prevented in only country where this ever happens,
right,
where this happens regularly.
That's right.
Here's the simple answer to that. We live in a country where you don't have to show a passport to go from state to state. We have these things called states. They have imaginary boundaries. You can drive across them. So, for example, when you're if you've got California, which happens to be connected to Arizona, is a state that has the weakest gun, is tied, I think, with Mississippi, or maybe just behind it, for the weakest gun laws in the country. So Nevada also was a state where the state legislature recently passed a background check bill, and their governor, Brian Sandoval, their Republican governor, vetoed it.
Right.
So they don't have background checks there either, which is why I mentioned someone in the piece, John Patrick Bedell, who's the one who was arrested, had a right-wing anti-government philosophy, who had been suffering from mental illness, tried to buy a gun in California. He'd been declared mentally unfit. California did it, you know, the gun laws worked, and they flagged him. He couldn't get a gun. Drove across the border to Nevada, got his gun, no problem, no questions asked. Ended up at the Pentagon, started shooting people.
Right.
So there's that. The second part is when you say the California laws didn't work, this murderer there had 41 10-bullet magazines, and he, you know, instead of having a 100-bullet magazine or hundreds, where he could have gotten many more bullets much easier, and he didn't have an assault weapon. As terrible as this thing was, it could have actually been much worse. If California, which has among the best in the country, like New York and Massachusetts and others, were willing to go as far as every other civilized country goes and do the common sense thing and do two things, which is require when someone wants to get a weapon that there are a couple referrals from family members and friends, that they're of sound mind, and conduct a psychological exam on them also at that time. Then this guy never gets a gun. The Navy Yard shooter never gets a gun. The guy in Aurora never gets a gun. In Virginia Tech, where the guy had been declared mentally unfit, that record was never even shared, or he wouldn't have gotten a gun. You could have prevented it in all these cases. So what I would say to them is, it's not that California's gun laws didn't work in this case. They did. They made this less severe. They're just not tough enough, to be quite honest with you. We need to go further. And the final thing I'll say is you've got examples that are pretty simple to find around the world and even within the United States. Because the one state, the one perfect test case that is not connected to other states you can't just drive into is Hawaii, clearly.
Right.
And Hawaii has the toughest gun laws in the country, okay?
Right.
They have they're one of the top three. They have the lowest gun ownership rate in the country, though. And magically, with those statistics, guess what else they have? The lowest gun violence rate in the country.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the example of Hawaii. You want to go beyond Hawaii, you can look at Japan, England, Canada, most Western European countries, and the rest. You know, they don't come close to us. In 2010, the Children's Defense Fund released a study showing that a child or teenager in this country is 65 times more likely to be shot than a child in England.
That's right.
So somebody tell me how their gun laws don't work, because these are places that have passed comprehensive gun laws, and the best case of all, most recently, because people say, oh, we're a frontier country. Canada was a frontier country. Australia was a frontier country. Australia was headed down the same path as us, and they had the Port Arthur massacre in 1996, which was their new town, where somebody showed up in Port Arthur in Tasmania, a tourist site, with a number of assault weapons and killed something like 40 people and injured another 30 or so. And the conservative government there, run by John Howard, basically just said enough. And they passed a comprehensive gun bill that included a 30-day waiting period, registration, licensing, and time on the range if you want to get a pistol, banned concealed carry unless you can have a good, you know, show a good reason for it, banned assault weapons and pump-action shotguns. So is there still gun ownership there? Absolutely. They still hunt there. You can still get, if you pass through the hoops that they have, you can still get a handgun. But they passed a whole series of measures, because these all make common sense. And what you've seen is, in 1996, when this occurred, in the 10 years leading up to that, they'd had 11 mass shootings. They were averaging over one a year. They have not had one since, in the 18 years since. They not only have their shootings gone down by about 70%, but their suicides have too. Because the other dirty little secret is, in most ways, when people who are depressed go through a sudden weak moment and try to kill themselves, often it is a weak moment, and often they won't do it multiple times. And if they're using something else, pills, a knife, something else, most of the time, people end up surviving.
Right.
Whereas the vast, vast majority of times, somebody puts a gun up to their head or in their mouth, as you'd expect, they don't survive. And so suicides have gone way down, too. Again, it is a public health problem, like smoking, like drunk driving, like venereal disease, like many other things where if you sit there and you don't let ideology dictate it, but you use the best science and common sense you have available, you can eliminate most of the problem. This is no different.
Absolutely. And I think before we move to the next topic, I just think the bottom line is, and the reason that your work in this is so important, is that this needs to completely leave the realm of historical, constitutional, philosophical, cultural debate, and really just get anchored in there is a pernicious and dangerous industry that will cynically use anything at its disposal to guard and expand its profits, period. That's what drives this. That's why we don't have gun control, and that's it. Everything else is noise. And
yeah,
that's
exactly right.
Yeah.
Right. And I would just say, for people who think we can't do that, we absolutely can, because this isn't a constitutional issue.
No, it's not.
I mean, the simple fact of the matter is that even with Justice Scalia's right-wing ruling that as Justice Stevens wrote in the Washington Post recently, a ruling that when he joined the Supreme Court in the 1970s, not one justice accepted that there was an individual right. The consensus of historians who studied the Revolutionary period don't accept that there was ever an individual right. This was a made-up farce by the NRA and adopted by right-wing judges. And again, Warren Burger, put on the court by Nixon, who was considered a rock-ribbed conservative, said that this was the greatest fraud perpetrated on the American public.
Well, I mean,
ever.
Look, right-wing imagined history is a dangerous thing. And there's nothing more clear than that when it comes to guns. So, you know, but let's move on to another area of I don't know if it's right-wing imagination, but it's certainly right-wing contortion. And I spoke about this yesterday, and I wanted to give you an opportunity to get in on this and also expand it, and also, frankly, to just give you an opportunity to talk about Mitch McConnell, which I don't know if it's good for your spiritual life, Cliff, but you certainly get a lot of joy out of it. So let's get to it. But
I do. It actually spiritually it makes me feel better.
It makes you feel spiritually nourished? Okay. All right, great. Then it's succeeding on all levels. But what we've noticed, and you've pointed this out before, and I think, you know, McConnell's the sort of prime example of this, but this gets much broader than McConnell, and it's how is the ACA playing out in the midterms? How is Obama playing out in the midterms now that it's no longer a philosophical abstraction, now that it's no longer a bad website? And, right. You know, we're seeing the results. And, you know, sure, there's some, you know, it's again, we can say this a gazillion times. It's not a perfect law. But on balance, particularly with a place like Kentucky that's benefiting from the Medicaid expansion, this law is saving lives if governors will allow it to save lives. And they're not doing sociopathic, denial of coverage. So particularly in Kentucky, this becomes a fascinating question. How do you square that your main activity in the Senate, or at least one of your prime activities, has been an attempt to kill this bill? Now this bill is saving lives in your state. So is there an intellectual and policy reassessment about this bill? Or do you go to the people and say, hey, look, I don't care. I'm going to kill it. No, Mitch McConnell did something that is very him. He went and said, well, of course I support the expansion and the exchange in Kentucky, and I still want to kill Obamacare. And
right.
In my imagined world, they're a completely different thing. So, but I want you to talk about that, and then I want you to get – because it's also interesting the way, you know, we were seeing this with Kay Hagan in North Carolina. She, you know, even if they're not saying I am a Obamacare supporter, even if the actual even if the identity of the bill as a whole is still questionable, they're starting to grab pieces and say, look, of course I support enhanced consumer protections. Of course I support increased Medicaid access. Of course I support people being able to buy affordable packages. What do you support? Is the frame changing on this issue? And how could it be further exploited? Could Democrats get even more aggressive on this?
Well, it definitely could, and we've talked about this before.
Yeah.
I mean, McConnell, if Alison Grimes is willing to take this to him, it looks like her rhetoric is getting a lot better on this. She was avoiding it before, and I would give the same advice to Michelle Nunn in Georgia and others who have sort of just tried to avoid this issue. Don't avoid this issue. It's easier in Kentucky, clearly, because the governor, Steve Beshear, did what was meant, what this plan was meant, you know, meant to do before the Supreme Court came out again with another stupid decision. What a shock. And said the states didn't have to accept Medicaid funding. And so just to be jerks, just to undermine the law,
absolutely,
just to be the evil people they are, all these Republican governors refused to expand Medicaid, even though it was covered by the federal government, so that they could deprive people of health care. In Kentucky, the governor, Steve Beshear, a Democrat, decided to do just the opposite. He decided to expand, you know, their system by as much as he could to set up not only expand Medicaid, set up an exchange called Connect in Kentucky. And it's been unbelievably effective to the point where over 400,000 people have now gotten health insurance through this. And this has created the biggest headache for the evil, manipulative Mitch McConnell, who couldn't give a damn about anybody else but his own career, because he's spent all of his time acting, you know, he's done what Republicans do. He's negatively branded Obamacare, and he's created that same division that we talked about on global warming and gun control and other things. That same division, either for Obamacare or you're against it. It's this evil socialist thing. Most people don't even know what Obamacare means. When you ask them about the individual parts of it, they're for almost all of them, and by wide margins. So now he's got to go to these people and tell them that he's going to kick 400,000 people off their health care. So now he's in an intellectually indefensible position that he's going to get reamed on, because basically he just keeps saying, well, we're going to still rip out Obamacare, but well, of course we'll keep Connect. Connect is Obamacare.
Yeah, Connect is Obamacare. I mean, but this raises a really important question, and this is an interesting test case to see how it plays out. I think obviously the stakes are entirely different because, again, this isn't an abstraction. Now you have health care, before you didn't have health care. So that's a very clear question. Are you going to take away my health care or not? But then at the same time, you know, this plays into, you know, Matt did a story a couple weeks ago, you know, going and asking lower income voters in Kentucky, you know, what do you think about the social safety net? And they recognized I need it. But then who's killing it? Obama, right? Who, you know, or Republicans aren't going to kill it. You know, just these really completely erroneous beliefs around it. So in some ways, it's a test case not only of how much mendacity and dishonesty this guy can get away with, but also whether, you know, even beyond healthcare, how do we start to have an accurate conversation about social safety net? I mean, that really is what it seems like the stakes are.
Well, no, it is, because this is what they've always done. What they do is they brand the term negatively.
Right.
So it's liberal or gun control or Obamacare or welfare, or, you know, keep going on and on from there, right? And they brand the term negatively. So people that are sort of more lower information voters or don't know as much, when they hear that term, they react negatively to it, not knowing what it does. It's Alison Grimes' job, frankly, and others in these races, to tell people, particularly those who can point to an effective and successful effort in their state, to say, this is what it does. Say, hey, you know what? This is what Mitch McConnell wants to take. He loves yelling about Obamacare. Here's what he attacks Obamacare. He says this, he says that. Let me translate for you what he's saying. He will take this away from you.
Right.
There's federal funding that is paying for your health care. If you have health care through Connect, And Mitch McConnell is successful in what he intends to do, you will lose it. She needs to be very clear about that, and very open about that, and very forward about that. And there may not be as many examples, because you've got Nathan Deal, for example, in Georgia, who's a right-wing imbecile who's blocked Medicaid expansion and who obviously didn't, I'm pretty sure if I'm right, didn't try to do an exchange. I'm sure he didn't, actually, so that you're going through the federal exchange. But clearly you can find out the number of people in Georgia. There must be numbers who, you know, this guy, you may know him too. I'm friendly with Charles Gaba, has been doing this fantastic series on signups of Obamacare. You know, go to him, go to others. You can probably find out how many people have gotten signed up to health care in Georgia or North Carolina or Louisiana or Alaska or really any other state where there's a Democratic incumbent, where Republicans are trying to run against this. And the way to always respond to this, it's always been the way, but Democrats have been too scared, every time they attack Obamacare, is to say to people, here's what my opponent is really saying. All of you who were able to get health care now because you could, and you couldn't because you had pre-existing conditions, he's going to take, or she's going to take away your health care. All of you who have children who are now able to be on your health care up to the age of 26, he or she is going to take away your health care. All of you who didn't have to worry about your health care company suddenly when you have a sickness taking it away from you, he or she's going to take away your health care. All of you who had to worry because you've got some sort of an illness that there was a yearly cap on what could be spent, and the rest would have to come out of your pocket, or a lifetime cap so that you're paying forever, that he or she's going to make you pay those prices. This is what you need to understand. So don't fall for his playing around with words. Don't fall for the demonizing of Obamacare or really anything else. Understand in your daily life how this is going to make a difference if Mitch McConnell has his way.
Well,
it's just that simple.
It's that simple. I mean, you could set up a website. The DNC should set up a death toll website. This, you know, every GOP governor that's not taking Medicaid funding, this is how many lives it's that are being lost as a result of it, or at least this is
that's
how
right.
much care. You know, I mean, set it up, have a clock, have a really elegant visual, and say this is the cost of ideology over reality, and this is the cost of cynical politics over human lives. It's so simple. I mean, it's right there. And I think the other thing that I just also would like to touch on about this that I think is also, you know, important that. Obviously, even with the protections and even with the changes in all of these and the important reforms in terms of things like caps and things like, you know, greater consumer protections, you know, you see this in the VA hospital. And obviously that is a real crisis, and it's led to people's lives being lost. It's not an Obama crisis. It's a long term crisis in the VA. But they immediately go to, you know, the cynical move and the obvious move is, well, this is what happens when you have, you know, government wait times and government health care and government bureaucracy. I want to see, you know, Democrats need to get on the, you know, bureaucracy's bureaucracy. When you dealt with HMOs and insurance companies and they rejected your claims and they didn't return your calls and they gave you a million onerous forms to fill out, what is that? That's bureaucracy. This isn't magically freedom.
Right.
This isn't magical freedom because it's conducted in the free market. And Democrats,
well, it's a business, so it must be right. It must be completely transparent and successful, you know, like Blackwater.
Exactly.
And all these other, I mean, the thing that has always been the, you know, I mean, there have been a number of sort of rhetorical devices that Democrats have never been willing to use, responses they've never been willing to use, that just drives me freaking nuts. And one of them is allowing this whole, this trope, allowing this garbage to go forth, that government is inefficient, but business is so efficient. Wall Street was damn efficient in 2007, wasn't it?
Right.
I mean, you know, the truth of the matter is that as business gets bigger and bigger, and this is what people should point out, it becomes less and less efficient. You know, you may have an argument when it comes to small business, but don't come talk to me about big healthcare companies and big oil companies and Wall Street and places like that. These large companies that you're going to tell me that are impersonal and are bureaucratic, you're going to tell me that they're efficient? Give me a break.
Bureaucracy,
you know?
Is bureaucracy, and we want you to have more healthcare and spend less time on the phone with your HMO. And in fact, if you're us, we don't want there to be an HMO, but that's another story. It seems like such an
obvious
argument.
Well, your HMO before, that's the death panel. They're the ones deciding whether you'll get your
exactly
get covered or not. That's your actual real life death panel.
Right. We just want you covered, and we want you to waste a hell of a lot less time dealing with these private sector bureaucracies, and that's exactly what they are. And that also should be hit every single frickin' day.
That's right.
But Cliff Schechter, I appreciate you coming on while we pinch hit for Sam, and it's a pleasure as always.
Well, always my pleasure, too. Thanks for having me on.
Okay, great, man. Thanks a lot.
Take care, guys.
Take care. Bye-bye. All right, folks. We are going to take a very, very brief break and return with film guy Matthew Weiss. Is that right, Matt?
Yes, we're going to return with film guy Matthew Weiss in just...
Just a moment.
A moment. Let me just get.
You just take. You're still
off.
Taking in that.
There we go.
I was a little cliff-like today. I was a little feisty. Usually, I'm a little bit more. Like Cliff has the fire, I have the cool. But I was a little pissed off myself today. how much more filler do I need to do before your
good.
Song is up?
Here we go.
All right, we're good. Okay, we'll be right back. And don't forget, special celebrity guest.
Oh yeah,
after
coming
film
up.
Guy.
Stay
Weiss.
Tuned.
Stay tuned.
I'm not afraid to
We are back. Michael's getting used to the board here. Look at that. Keep bringing that down. The one right next to Sam's computer. There we go. Ah.
Just trying to give you a fade out, man.
Giving Michael the props for the fade out, and then I think I distracted him. Well, joining us now on the phone, as we always do on Casual Friday, to the new listeners out there, we either have one of our lovely film review film guests, sometimes Isabel Gillies, sometimes the guest on today, and sometimes Sam Cedar will invite one of his comedy/celebrity friends. But today, because I'm in the chair...
Today is both.
Well, that's true, yes. Joining us now is film guy Matthew Weiss. How you doing, Matthew?
Hey, everybody. I'm doing great. Glad to be here, as always.
And before we get to film guy Matthew Weiss, though, I'm sorry I have to interrupt you. I just realized I almost forgot to play your theme song. It's on the soundboard, Michael. Just put up the one next to me. There we go.
Matthew, the film guy, is choosing your streams. Cassavetes on Netflix and other such teams. Maybe you'll watch one and learn a few things. Please recommend me a movie to stream. Matthew, please recommend me a movie to stream. Matthew, film guy.
Props to Michael. He's getting better at the board each and every day.
And each and every, like,
we
week or something, because I rarely even am behind this thing.
I didn't even show him how to play that song, and he figured it out.
Basically, a trained ape could do this job. I'm just kidding. No, it's amazing. It's amazing how I've gotten more comfortable.
If you're putting yourself below the trained ape, I guess.
Yeah. I was. I'm like a trained orangutan or something. All right, go ahead.
Film guy Matthew, thank you for being here, man. How you doing? What's been up?
Oh, man, I've been busy as hell with my comedy web series that I think I told you guys about last time.
Yes, that's the one with Ted Alexandra?
Yep.
How's it going?
Lounge. It's going great. We're still trying to raise the rest of the money to finish it, so we've got one of those, what do you call them, Kickstarter campaigns.
Yep.
So if anybody wants to go visit that, we can throw that link up. I'd be hugely indebted, but, you know.
Well, tell us on air where we can go.
Just plugged out of the way.
Go to Kickstarter.com and just search what?
Teacher's Lounge. Also, I'll send you guys a link if you guys want to
do that.
Yeah,
send us the, why not? Send
proactive
us the, of course.
Thanks, I appreciate
what's left,
it.
What's left, what like what's to, left to do? More shooting or?
We've got basically we sort of extended ourselves to do some of the shooting, and then we've got to cover the production post-production costs. But we were able to get people like Jim Gaffigan, David Tell, Todd Barry, Rachel Feinstein, Michael Che, who is an amazing comedian that people are going to start hearing a lot more about, and to Jim Norton. So we've got like an amazing cast for the second group of episodes, but we've just got to raise enough money to put it all down.
Isn't Janine in it too? Isn't Janine Garofalo?
She actually does do the. She does do the voice of the PA announcer in the mornings. Every episode starts off with a comedic little announcement, and she does those. Yeah.
You know, I just say really quickly, because obviously Sam, of course, is not going to be in this. So I'll just say for me, Michael Brooks available.
Oh yes, I'm available too. And you know what? I'm sure we can undercut any of the people you got in the web series already.
In terms of price,
yes.
You're going to compete on price. That's the free market at work.
Yes.
That's really the free market at work. I like that.
So if you need any handsome young men.
Yeah. Let me know if you know any.
If you need anyone to play the students of the school, I guess.
I did send a Kickstarter outline to Sam because I was able to write the sentence that over the years I've had the privilege of working with comedy heavyweights like Jerry Seinfeld, Sam Cedar, and others.
Seinfeld, Sam Cedar, and others.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah, Sarah Silverman, Colin Quinn, Mark Maron, David Cross. But I just wanted to make sure that Sam knew that he was right up there right after Seinfeld.
He probably will very much appreciate that.
Yeah, just making sure that gets back to him.
So when it's done, you're going to have to let us know so we could totally check it out, obviously.
Absolutely. And, you know, one of the Kickstarter rewards, because you know how we give out sorts of bribes and stuff to get people involved, one of the rewards is tickets to the premiere party and tickets to Also, other side-related events where all these comedians will be performing. So if you guys are in New York, you like comedy, come check it out. You can help us support independent productions like this and actually see a really funny show.
Sounds good. So let's get down to...
All right, so we got the plug out of the way.
So let's get down to business. Yeah. You've brought us a movie, a TV show. What are you recommending today?
Well, I did bring a movie. I usually have these in the hopper for you guys. I know that you and I usually talk about TV. Walking Dead has been off the air.
We'll talk about it right after you give your suggestion.
Oh, please, okay. God, come on. There's only so much more we can take.
No. It's the Matt and Matt staple when there's a Matt and Matt Friday.
And to be honest, I haven't been catching up on a lot of TV lately, being busy with all this stuff. The DVR is thick with potential. But I did get to go see recently at the Museum of the Moving Image, which is actually a hugely amazing resource for film.
That's
and
in
all
Queens.
Kinds of other events. Right in my neighborhood in Astoria. I'm a member, and I'm really grateful for that being so close to me. And they just did a complete retrospective on one of the great Japanese filmmakers, Kenji Michiguchi. And I had actually never really seen very many of his films and had the chance to see three really amazing ones. And with the kind of conversation out there lately being about misogyny and women, their objectification, you know, Michiguchi did a lot of movies chronicling the historical issues with women as concubines in Japan and as prostitutes, and there was a lot of nuance in the way that job, as you would call it, the oldest profession, was handled in Japanese feudal times to the present. And one of the best movies that I saw, and one of his most highly acclaimed movies, is his last one called Street of Shame, It takes place in modern times when it was shot in 1956. And at the time, the red light district in Japan was legal. So this is about a particular red light district that was very famous for years, hundreds of years, maybe even 1,000 years, where concubines could be obtained. And at this point, it was like they were like carnival barkers outside saying, come in, come in, you know, a very active red light district. And this movie is a really sensitive and nuanced and complex story detailing the lives of several of the women that worked there, including their boss and all the different family members. And it's not just a tisking of the enterprise. It definitely illustrates the dangers and the kind of cost to these women and their lives for doing this. But I felt like it was a good reaction to the kind of a knee-jerk either pro or con kind of misogyny discussion that has been going on post some of these recent events. So people should go check out Street of Shame. And it's only 87 minutes, so it's not 3 hours of lesbians going down on each other, which I know is
subjective. Wow.
Well, being that you bring that up, have you seen that movie that Isabel recommended?
No, but it was definitely high on my list. I have to tell you, Matt, it definitely sounded... The Cassavetti-ishness of it appeals to me. And I've got a lot of responses from people who I value their opinion, and they all said I would love it. So it's definitely on my list. But 3 hours, it is a big commitment, so I have yet to actually see it. But
so this Street of Shame sounds very good. It sounds good.
Consciously already. Yeah, it's really great, and it's funny, and it's moving, and it's got a sociological impact. And in fact, one of the main plots in the movie is about this law that they're trying to get passed to outlaw legal prostitution. And this movie actually played a big role in that law eventually getting passed.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So having that kind of weight behind it will inform your viewing, I think,
so
as well.
Was that the purpose of the film, though? Were they trying to get that done? Or was
no,
it just
I don't
an
think
unintentional...
so. You know, I don't think Michiguchi was very, you know, I know he had a lot of sensitivity towards this issue. Like I said, he did at least three or four, maybe even more movies through his career about prostitution or about concubines, per se. And I don't know if he had a strongly pro or con stance against it, which is, you know, as an artist, I think you really owe your audience. You know, some movies can be polemical and kind of wave the flag, but I think a true artist tries to see the nuance and sort of the emotional impact on all sides of an issue and doesn't narrow it down so sort of succinctly. And that's why I think this movie is good for people to see these days. You get a little a well-rounded view. Keep your mind open a little bit. Not that I'm pro prostitution in any way, but
no, but I mean
at
it's
least not I'm not an advocate, but there is a lot to be said for it being safe and
exactly,
you know,
yes.
A woman's choice.
Yes, yeah. I was just interested to see if he was trying to, because I was just interested to see if he had any political ideology that he tried to pass through with the movie that ended up getting that law passed.
No, you know, I can say fairly by having just watched the movie and not done a lot of research on his personal political activities that I don't think he had a very pro or con view, and that he would he made his points sort of human points, you know, not political points.
Mm-hmm. So, Street of Shame, it sounds like a movie to put on the list to see. I definitely will be checking this one out. Even though I usually, you know, try to give you a little knock when I'm talking, when you recommend your movies.
Yeah, well, you know, Street of Shame, you know, a lot of fancy critics have called it one of the greatest films in the history of cinema. And,
really?
You know, so you've got this quote by Jean Duché, who wrote for Cahiers du Cinéma. He said that, for me, along with Chaplin's Monsieur Verdot and Renoir's Rules of the Game, which, by the way, Rules of the Game is one of my favorite movies of all time, he calls this the greatest film in the history of cinema. Now, I personally won't go that far after one viewing, but it really is kind of like a perfectly made film. There's, you know, the perfect balance between sort of engagement in plot and character, but also, you know, tone and emotion and filmmaking style. So it's not self-consciously arty. There aren't three-hour, you know, long shots and things like that. But
I've never heard
it really is kind of a perfect landing.
I've never heard Crocodile Dundee 2 described that way before, Matthew. It's a fascinating pick and description.
Well, really, yeah. That series didn't get going until he came back to America. And
yeah.
Go back to America.
Well, before we go and then this this conversation, it would be completely irresponsible of me to end this conversation actually without talking about, you know, talk 5 minutes about television shows. You haven't been watching any TV you mentioned up top?
You know, I didn't hear the beginning of the show, but I've been watching Game of Thrones. That's the one show that.
Oh yes, okay, we can talk about Game of Thrones because I can proudly announce that after poo-pooing this show and saying I just couldn't get into it and it just wasn't for me.
Too historical,
based on too many historical facts.
Not
a big fan of period pieces.
Right.
I am hooked. I think it is the best show on television, and I've caught up completely.
Yeah.
I've watched every single episode up to the most recent. And
nice.
I think it's, at the very least, better written than Walking Dead by far.
Yeah, I'll just politely agree with that.
I'm sure many people. But if you're new to the show, I have a love for the show Walking Dead. So for me to say this, it's a big step.
Has there been like a big jump in new members? Is that why we're resetting this a lot?
Yes. Not new members per se, but new listeners.
New listeners? Great. That's awesome.
Have you heard Sam will be starting his own 3 to 6 radio show, syndicated radio show on Monday?
No.
You've not heard?
Freaking amazing.
You did not hear about this?
I have
this.
Not heard. You know, I'm behind on...
You have been just in like
regular
a Kickstarter.
To the show. Yeah, exactly. I'm like a week and a half behind on the show, so I'm sure I'll hear about it sometime in the middle of next week.
So, yes, Sam will be starting a show on Monday, 3 to 6. We will have more information soon on where you can listen to it. But, yeah, that's why we've been doing the show, Matt, to give Sam some time to prepare for this brand-new Ring of Fire radio with Sam Cedar.
That's fantastic. I'm so glad. He needs to get out there more, and I'm glad his profile is being raised.
Yeah, but enough about Sam. More about Game of Thrones. So
Game of Thrones. I have to say, it, not only is that one of the best written shows, but it is also one of the most sort of ruthless and sadistic shows with any of your kind of your loyalties. And I feel like that is the biggest thing that it brings to the genre of our serial television. Anyone can die. Anything can happen, and you're kind of constantly traumatized by this show. So it's it giveth and it taketh away.
Well, I guess the same could be said about Walking Dead.
Except for Walking Dead doesn't... I mean, that's true, but I just feel like the quality of the writing is such...
Oh, yeah, of course. This is the major difference to me. Everything in Game of Thrones is so perfectly planned out. There's nothing where, like, oh, we got to write this in because something happened in real life that we have to change in the show. Whereas Walking Dead will have no problem rewriting something that makes no sense just to change something because an actor is leaving or they didn't think out the storyline through a few months in advance and they're just writing it literally.
Well, yeah, and if I recall correctly, they sold out Frank Darabont, who was the original creative force behind it.
Yes, and that's why they had to – and that's why they wrote out Dale in the second season because the actor didn't want to work on the show if he wasn't there.
Well, that shows you that HBO is a solid operation. I'm sure they have double or triple the budget for their episodes too.
Oh man, Game of Thrones must be like going to war. Like the filmmaking equivalent of going to war. It's unbelievable the level of coordination, locations.
Yeah, going to war on like three fronts simultaneously because I know they're shooting in like three different places around the world and. Yeah, that's
and even with all that complexity, it still does come back to the writing. And I think what that show does, though, I know it's sadistic and it's violent and all this stuff that people focus on, but it does politics really well.
Yes,
it's great intrigue. I mean, that's what I kind of find so impressive about it.
You're not cheering on the violence; like you're actually affected emotionally when something happens. Yeah. Like, exactly. Like when someone does something terrible, it doesn't make out that person to be a good guy. Like, you hate that person because they're terrible. And when someone does
Would you say that maybe next week you're cheering on a little bit of violence?
Next week I'm cheering on... I want to see just what happens. I don't know what they're going to do.
Oh, I like that Viper dude. And I have ominous feelings about what's going to happen, but I'm definitely cheering him on to kill the big dude.
The Mountain?
Definitely. Definitely.
But this is how I feel.
Building that up for a while.
I don't see how either character could die. I just feel like they haven't established either really enough.
But again, this is Game of Thrones.
Yes, I know. But usually when something like that happens, like in the first season when what's his face is killed.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, that's why I said what's his face. They establish
His head.
Yeah, what's his head? Where's his head? No, but they establish him pretty much as a fledged out character, like a full
face of the show show launched.
Yeah. He's on all the posters.
So it's not it's not like they just were like, we need to kill somebody, let's do him just to be shocking. Like they actually built him up and that's why it was shocking.
Right. Well, again, it could be the most beautifully set show in the world, and if the writing isn't there, you're not going to be involved. And by that same token, it could be a lower budget web comedy show with not the most money to spend on everything, but since the scripts are really hilarious and funny.
Ooh,
and
look
tight,
at this. Wow.
Are you really trying to compare your little web operation to Game of Thrones?
Ooh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hold on, Michael.
Yeah, I am.
Michael, hold on a minute. We really can't say to somebody your little web operation. I mean,
I was aware of the irony of what I was saying. No, I'm actually really looking forward to
what's even more ironic is that I'm using your little web operation to try to get more eyes on my little web operation.
This is basically like
a perfect description of the modern American economy. Actually.
So our slightly larger little web operation. Yeah. All right, Matthew Film Guy, the movie is Street of Shame. Where can we see it? Is it on Netflix?
You know what? I didn't even bother to check since Sam's the one who needs it for streaming. But
it's on Hulu and YouTube, so it's easily available for free, actually, if it's on YouTube. You don't even got to sign up for anything. So there's no excuse for anybody to say they did not watch this movie.
And I just want to say to you, Matt, I think you should check out Blue is the Warmest Color, just to see if your notions are true or not. I know what it's like to be the heel in one of these conversations and just to take that stance. And I really think there is something there's something fun about that. But I also think that it's a dangerous attitude to just always condemn something that tries to be a little what you might call arty. Because maybe they are genuinely arty. You know, maybe they're pretentious. That could be a possibility for sure.
I gotta say, someone is sounding pretty arty and pretentious right now. And with that,
Michael's mic down?
Ooh. All right, Matthew. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you, man.
Take care.
And we're just gonna better half today. Freebie Friday. Everyone's got to hear this. Our special celebrity guest
is just getting situated.
Entered the room, and to welcome our special celebrity guest, we were going to play what was sent to us. It's 107, our special celebrity guest, if you're wondering what time it is. No? We are going to play, a listener sent us a Madden Mike theme song. It's, you know where the videos are on QuickTime? It's one of those that isn't the Jimmy Reefer Cake song. There's only three up. Well, let's have our guest on first, and Michael will figure this out. So we'd like to welcome to the show. Why don't you do the introductions, Michael? You have a nice introduction planned out.
I'm incredibly excited to welcome. This is a man whose foray in the worlds of comedy have yielded some results, whose connection to celebrities across many, again, comedy and film have again yielded some results, and whose relentless advocacy of an increase in Social Security benefits have earned him little to no praise. That is right. Joining us now is
in studio
is our fearless leader, our quasi celebrity boss, and the host of a new syndicated radio show which you can hear across the country, Samuel Cedar.
You gotta press the button. Wait, hold on. Actually, Michael hasn't even put you up.
Go ahead.
Thank you.
He's doing his best to be here.
I finally get a sense of what it is to sit on this side of of the broadcast operation here, and to I get a sense on how not to actually project into a microphone and forget to press a button, and then also watch somebody not pod me up. From this angle.
Right.
So it's exciting to be here. Guys, I listened to part of the show today as I was running around. And
are you a member?
I am actually a member. I gave myself a comp membership. And you guys have done a great job. I did catch Matt, film guy Matthew, coming on and hawking I don't know what.
He's always hawking something. He's switched from like the most arty guest to the most kind of like, I got a new project.
It's kind of amazing.
That's the way you do it. It's like, it's sort of, you ingratiate yourself right. And then you come in and you start to sell. That's basically what Matthew's up to. Guys, it's great to be here. As you can see, I just had a slice of pizza. I heard so much about the Dollar Lunch District that I indulged today. I should tell people that I've been running around all week. You know, originally I was scheduled, obviously, to go out to L.A. this week to host TYT. And I was also supposedly, and this is a big supposed, I was going to be invited into the garage for the WTF podcast. I don't know if that was actually a genuine invitation, or it was just one of those, come into the garage, Sam.
We'll put you on Marin type.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I was talking to Marin.
We'll put you on the show Marin type.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Like that.
You're saying an offer that was really sort of
never going to happen.
Insincere.
An offer that can be refused because it's not an offer.
Right.
Yes.
Exactly. Yeah. And, but so instead, over the weekend, as I think all of you know, Ed Schultz has left radio as of the past week. Randy Rhodes also sadly left radio the past 2 or 3 weeks. And Tom Hartman is moving his show to 1 to 3 p.m., which left open the 3 to 6 p.m. slot. I obviously still have a lot of strong feelings about doing radio. It was some of the most fun I've ever had. And then, I'd walk off the microphone and then walk into Air America and in the most sort of the frustrating times of my life. So this opportunity came up. And I still feel like this podcast is my home base. It's a live show, too. I mean, it's a radio. It's a show. We deliver it a bunch of different ways. And this format is also something that I think I've grown to love probably a little bit more than radio. Radio, you can't do stuff that is as deep. But with that said, there's value in having such a wide audience on day one. There is value in in reaching people by accident. The Majority Report, you know, except for, although YouTube, I think to a certain extent, has sort of opened that up for us, at least in the better half of the program. You don't have people who accidentally stumble upon the show.
While driving or whatever.
While driving and of any political inclination. And so it has a different impact, and it's a different type of programming. I'm going to be doing 4.5 hours of radio a day. I mean, 3 hours of radio, which is actually 108 minutes of actual programming time. And then we do another 90 minutes of programming time. So it's really the functional equivalent of doing almost 6 hours of radio a day in radio parlance. But as you guys know, I can talk for extended periods of time.
Sam's a machine.
And also, I wanted to take a little break from my family.
Right.
And so,
no, I mean, that's been clear for a while. Yes. You've been looking for an angle on that. And I think that this came at a very opportune time because obviously you just moved to Brooklyn. There was a lot more responsibility. And this just sort of came right at a very perfect timing in terms of family avoidance.
So my hope is to hook up with Saul sometime around
18.
Well, you know, I want to attend his high school graduation. And, of course,
maybe a Little League game at some point in between or something. Possibly not.
If he could fit
probably
it into his
not,
schedule.
But, you know, if it happens on a weekend and I'm not relaxing. and by relaxing, I mean, of course, you know, doing some chore that Nikki has told me to do. But, no, you know, I figure let's give it a try. I don't know how much longer terrestrial radio will be around. So this was a good opportunity. And one of the questions, obviously, that you guys have been getting and that I've been getting is how can you listen to it? There will be a stream. I don't know the details yet. I'm also trying to work out a situation where we can figure out how to stream it on the Majority Report app, which you can get at majorityapp.com. At the very least, I'll be using the app. I'm going to be trying to take – one of the things I did back on the Sam Cedar show and Cedar on Sundays – on Air America was, and at that time it was groundbreaking technology, the SammyCam. And during the breaks, which are extended on commercial radio, I would take IMs, which is really basically how I came to take IMs in the second half of the show. I don't know that any other radio host does that or has ever done it. What we would do on Air America is during the breaks, we would leave the camera running. It was a separate stream. And I would take IMs, and there's almost like a second show going on there. Mm-hmm. And for Majority Report members, and probably initially even for anybody who has the Majority Report app, I will be doing the same thing. If I can figure out how to set it up. We've just found studios literally this morning. This studio does not have the technical ability.
This is a YouTube podcast studio.
Oh, no, I haven't even gotten to the lack of qualifications of the people in this studio to do anything.
I had to say, Matt is just uncanny at walking him into those. Like, at least, I know they're coming anyways, but I'm not going to be his setup for those.
Yeah,
at least. Unless,
until you're talking to the wrong side of the microphone.
which side is that?
Well, I think that's my point. And so my hope is that very early, we start obviously Monday, but very early, sometime next week, we will have up a video feed that will be on during the breaks. I don't know if it'll even function during the not breaks, but during the breaks, so I will take IMs. Now, I'm doing a lot of radio, so I'm not going to have the same level of engagement that I did back in the old Air America days, or that I do here on the show. But it'll be something so that, you know, Majority Report members are getting sort of a little back door into what's going on there. And I expect that the programming is going to be, it's not going to be the same as this show. We're not going to do the in-depth interviews because you can't do that on AM Talk Radio. But and we're going to do a little bit more activism. You know, because we're going to have a broader reach. We're going to do a little bit more about elections particularly going into this season, obviously, because we're in, I don't know how many states it is, but I think about 40 affiliates, somewhat. Hopefully, ultimately, we'll be on Sirius. My guess is that would be tape delayed if that happens, because I think Hartman has a tape delayed show on there. So, you know, all these things are up in the air. Right now, what we're doing is just literally working on getting a physical space and people to provide some measure of support so that when I faint for total exhaustion, that, you know.
Will you finally start?
Somebody's there to play
maybe,
music.
Maybe. Sorry, what?
Somebody's there to play music or something like that.
After
like
you pass out?
Yeah.
Will you finally start following my health advice for you now that you've taken on this schedule?
Oh, sure. Now I have a lot more time to exercise.
It's not just exercise. There's also some, you know.
Go to Spa Castle.
Like the
PGA. Yeah, you should go to Spa Castle. That's right. You should go to Spa
Castle.
What
is Spa Castle?
It's out in Flushing.
It's in Flushing. Right. Big spa.
Yeah. Yeah, let's set up a 2-hour trip for you to Queens to sit at some Korean spa.
It's actually, I think it's like 24
hours. Literally, I think right now my day is going to be... I've of course the timing of moving to Brooklyn is a little bit tricky now, I will get home probably around 7. I will have dinner. I will say hello and good night to Saul, and then I will say hello and good night to Myla, and I will hopefully say hello to Nikki at that point, and then good night. Wake up in the morning. Spend some time with Saul first thing, walk Myla to school, come in, start my day, rinse, repeat, and then I pass out.
Well, I think, yes. Well, more water, more green tea at the very least.
More water, I think, is actually something I could do.
Yeah.
And fortunately, the studio for the radio show, at least temporarily, is still literally and not metaphorically in the shadow of the New York Times building. It is 2 blocks away from here.
So perfect.
I timed it today. I think some of our listeners realize that I am a little bit obsessive compulsive. So I need to know exactly how much time it takes me to get from anywhere. And I've timed going one direction. I can either go 8th Avenue or 7th Avenue. And I've timed 8th Avenue, and it's under 5 minutes.
So that's great.
So I may go 7th Avenue and see if I can cut it down to like 4 minutes and 15 seconds or something. So, but that's basically it.
But I mean, I think that's it's obviously a great new way to, as you say, just expose people randomly to get them to come on. It might mean possibly a different set of conservative and libertarian callers calling this show, which is a fringe benefit that
that's
I'm
right.
kind of excited yes. about.
Random Sam, if you will.
And, you know, I will have... I think on this show, we've had some success bringing on, and from time to time we have sort of debates across the political spectrum. I mean, mostly we've had libertarians, but, then you get like libertarians and libertarians, they're all in quotes as far as I'm concerned. So, it's really, Peter Schiff, he's just like a Republican.
He's a Republican.
And I've also had like debates with people like Jonathan Alter.
Hey!
There you go. And of course, the professor.
I'm hoping that the radio that would be part of it is a little bit more, because actually, I got Jonathan Alter wrote some stuff this last weekend about Glenn Greenwald. I think that we're going to have to touch.
Oh,
on
Oh, did
at some
he
point.
As well?
He tweeted. It okay. wasn't as, but there's right. some other stuff we're going to need to. I think part of the radio show is also being a little bit on the internal fight in the Democratic Party.
Definitely. I mean, one of the things, there's been a couple of stories in the New York press about the WFP. And, of course, we've been talking about this for a long time. The WFP, we won't know until their convention this weekend. But they have floated the idea, and it appears that they're going to be running a candidate against Cuomo. It looks like it's going to be Zephyr Teachout if they do this. Their convention's this weekend. She used to work on the Dean campaign. She is a law professor at Fordham. She was very involved in the creation of the Moreland Commission, which was ostensibly set up to deal with corruption in New York State and ostensibly to be independent of Cuomo the Lesser. but sadly, he disbanded it in some deal that he made with the Republicans. And so that's something that I think on the radio program, because, from my perspective, Here you have a race where Cuomo is going to win. That seems to be a foregone conclusion. The real question is, how big of a win is he going to get? And, you know, people who are not, and most of the people on this audience are savvy enough to get this at this point, but people who are not terribly savvy about politics say, what difference does that possibly make? And the easiest explanation is simply to look across the Hudson River,
right,
and see what incredible lengths Chris Christie went to pad his victory. Not just what we know about the bridge closings, not just what we know about handing out Sandy money, but also, people forget this, he pushed through the special election for Cory Booker,
yes,
to take place, right, maybe 30 days before the regularly scheduled election, because he did not want to run at the same time that there was going to be a race in the Democrats. He didn't want the Democrats to come out and vote against him, costing the state literally millions of dollars. And so if you want proof how much Andrew Cuomo wants to be a national figure, wants to beat his father's re-election figures, wants to be there in the event that Hillary Clinton doesn't run, wants to be there in the event that she does run. I mean, he's not that old, right?
Absolutely.
And so this is a way to, on a practical level, keep this guy from being the next media darling.
He needs to be neutralized as a national figure.
But it also goes beyond that, because it is a message to the rest of the Democratic Party that while we can appreciate what you've done on in terms of social issues, marriage equality, obviously hugely important, he was slightly out ahead of that. But I mean, just, you know,
slightly.
And he passed the SAFE Act. He pushed it through. And when I talk about Cuomo having this much authority, he does have this much authority. Mm-hmm. He single-handedly, I think, prevented the Democrats from taking over the state Senate and empowered a group of five independent senators, independent Democrats, Joe Lieberman Democrats, who caucus essentially with the Republicans. And so when I say that he passed this, he has that ability, which I think is relatively unique. And for a governor who supposedly doesn't have a same party legislature. And this is a message to Democrats nationally. You cannot ignore your progressive base. You cannot ignore issues of income inequality. You cannot provide tax cuts for millionaires. You cannot provide tax cuts for millionaires who are passing on their estates. You cannot impose austerity on people who need these services so that you can give more tax breaks to rich property owners. You cannot promise to have campaign finance and then renege on that promise. You cannot push the privatization of our schools. You cannot put up Potemkin plans to provide universal pre-K without any serious dedicated funding. You cannot do this without paying at least some modicum of a price. And that price for Andrew Cuomo is going to be your political career will end when you are done being governor of New York State. And that is a lesson. And, of course, it has practical implications in New York City, but that's basically it.
Absolutely. So. And I think actually really to keep a serious eye on the campaign finance reform thing, because that's how he's trying to migrate his way back into progressive good graces. He said the other day, if the legislature doesn't do campaign finance reform, then I probably will get more serious about campaigning for Democrats. It's the most disingenuous thing imaginable.
Look, I think for the WFP, I think that was the red line for them. That's my sense. And if they believed that Andrew Cuomo would come through. But how do you believe this guy? This is what he ran on in 2010. Mm-hmm. And he enabled a Republican Senate and who, by all accounts, apparently were interested in this. So, I think it's a good time to talk about this on a national level. And, you know, the audience that listens to this program is significantly more, with all due respect to radio audiences, more savvy about politics.
Right.
And this is a self-selected set of people who listen. It's in the thousands, but it's not in the, you know, tens of hundreds of thousands. And so, in many respects, what we talk about here will become fodder, you know, this is sort of the this is the master's degree, and the radio is the bachelor's degree, yeah, as it were. And so that's that.
So that's really exciting. I mean, it really actually is. Really, no. Well, I mean, yeah, it's exciting for people who want to live. People have been excited.
No, it
about
is exciting. It is exciting. I'm terrified.
He actually really does. I got to say, yeah, this isn't the usual Sam Cedar hyperbole right here. You are looking at a frightened man right now.
No,
he's
I'm
huddled in the
he
corner.
Looks,
right
he
now.
Looks. He looks totally.
There's
cornered.
A lot of work involved in this, and but you know, you got to make hay when the sun is shining.
And obviously, you know, we'll stop by the new show from time to time. We're going to run the
maybe.
We're already getting the downgrade.
No, wait, but we're see the Bentley that my producers for the radio show pulls up in here.
That is
they're going to be like we're all going to be chilling by the pool,
just ranking in that terrestrial radio money.
Exactly,
that sweet terrestrial radio.
Sweet.
Yeah,
it's like, exactly. Yeah, this is 1940 all of a sudden, and there's just
I was
money.
Saying, you know, I was just meeting with a guy who used to be a producer at Air America, and my friend Chad, and I think I was saying to him, it was like, I've been talking to so many people to try and just sort of get studio space, and that it's radio in the 21st century has now basically gone back to radio in the early 20th century. We now have the technology.
This is like, brother, where art thou?
Right, exactly.
It's just kind of like, I think we can find a space receiver somewhere over there up on the Upper West Side.
This is not going to be as glamorous and lucrative as radio was just even 10 years ago.
I'm picturing you walking into like the CBS studio, and there's a guy who's like named like Art Kramer, who's just been like there since like 1955.
No,
you're not even there.
I'll tell you about this studio. The studio is a sort of basically a voiceover booth.
Oh,
at the end of a hall that used to have other studios, right, that are now office space. So you have like these,
wow,
three or four offices that are completely soundproofed. And I walk down and it's like half a storage closet and half a broadcast facility.
Wow.
So the one significant upgrade is that there is central AC. So because we contemplated actually doing it from here. And aside from the fact that you guys obviously have production work after the show, the air conditioning going into summer, I mean you guys remember, like, you know, we'd have to turn on the air conditioner, you know, sometimes in this part of the show.
Yeah, the
and we're getting very close there now. We need to get batteries in that clock, but it's probably pushing 80 degrees in here right now.
Yeah,
and in the summer it gets up into the 90s.
So please become a member, and we can add maybe a few more fans in here or something.
Yeah,
I don't even know where they would go.
A few more fans.
Well,
we don't have a fan.
The real play is hopefully to sort of like get an integrated facility.
Right.
Maybe we'll go across the river or something like that, and who knows.
But the bottom line, more people having more opportunity to hear you. There's going to be ways for this audience to interact with the new show.
Yep.
And then more people, I mean, you know, I think even with you being on Hartman and talking about it, we're seeing it a little bit. People are kind of knowing that this is happening.
Yep.
Coming over here and checking it out. And the Masters Bachelors comparison, that makes a lot of sense.
And of course, Matt and Mike, every Monday, MB Squared. My understanding is that you guys are already starting to
take over
and create packaging.
Oh yeah, someone sent us a
I'm doing a series with Miss Cleo on the midterms. She's going to give us psychic predictions on who holds
the
Senate.
Call me now for your free.
You should
would be pretty funny.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
To do. All right, well, let's hear
the
it.
The cards don't lie. Is it Bad Boys? Is
no,
that
that's
it?
Jimmy Reefer Cakes. So it's the other one.
Wait, have you not played Jimmy Reefer Cakes?
No,
let's
not
play
yet.
Jimmy Reefer Cakes first, because then you can come over and help.
But that doesn't make. Oh,
I don't see it.
All right.
I apologize.
Here we go.
I thought.
Play the Jimmy Reefer Cake one. Here's Jimmy Reefer Cakes song.
Bad Boys. That's BADBUOYZ.com.
Boys.
boys. What? Bad boys. Bad boys. What you gonna do? Design your graphic t-shirts. Yeah, they make them for
what?
You. The material is great with the quality CDs.
This is us. This is ours.
Oh.
This is ours.
Did you you might have pressed both by accident. Continue, Jimmy Reaper Cakes.
Wear it to the school, and you wear it to the pool. Up here in Maine, where the weather is cool, gets a hooded sweatshirt. Don't you be a fool. Bad boys, bad boys. What you gonna
oh
do?
Oh, my God.
Designer graphic t-shirts, yeah, they make them for you. On the hoodie, now give me pressure.
Jimmy, you got it. Come on, man. Come on. That's a little excessive.
What is this, like, was that just like literally an ad jingle he wrote for them?
Literally was
Come
an ad jingle.
Come on, Jimmy. I guess we got to start listening to your songs before we play them now.
Yeah, you don't want that to happen. I mean, I like the song. It's just that I think that it's sort of a little bit off message.
Come
so
on,
what's
Jimmy.
The other thing that we're listening
All right.
to?
Well, I'll play it here, Michael.
Got it. All right, yeah, play it.
This is, someone this... sent us a Matt and Mike theme song.
A Matt and Mike theme song.
For the Matt and Mike show when we do the show and Sam's not here. Here we go.
It's Matt and Mike on Monday all day long today. No bullcrap from Sam Seaver, they are here to stay. We get to hear coherent sentences. We pray. I like the majority report this way.
Still going.
No, it's not. No, it's
Is that
not.
It? Oh, you
turn
just
it. Turn Sam's computer down. Okay. It just keeps playing.
Oh, I
playing.
See.
Jeez.
Well, that was I know bull crap from Sam Cedar. And I'm looking forward to hearing coherent sentences.
Who is the person who sent that song?
I'm looking right now. It is from.
Do you have a stammer strategy for terrestrial radio? Because the time constraints are a little tighter.
I'm not going to stammer as much.
That's the strategy. I will just lessen that.
I'm going to lessen it.
Hjalmar Hockey, a.k.a. Oil Panic.
Oil Panic? Wow. I haven't heard. Is he IM?
I've never heard of
this. Is this guy coming out of the... Oh, is that just he your said, fake handle?
He said it took me several hours to do, so you better play it or else I will quit my member. He's a member.
Well, hello, man.
There you go. All right. It actually sounds pretty good. I like it.
I like it, too.
Yeah, it was good. That was really funny.
You want to take a couple IMs?
Let's do some IMs.
And then we'll wrap it up.
I think you'll probably have some questions here, Sam, so let's see.
Yeah, okay.
Charlie, when we buy stuff using the Amazon link, do you see what we bought? If so, there is a very good explanation for my recent over-the-top of the soundtrack purchase. No, we do not. We don't even get to see the percentage, like what you contributed. We just get a... Boom.
I'm very troubled by what this audience is buying.
Yes. Bob Duncan 02. Here's a clip of Stefan Molyneux. Short context. It's from a video he made about Maya Angelou. Oh, boy.
I'll play it on Monday.
Yeah, in which she was discussing her early life and the troubles her son was having after she left him with her mother. This was after talking about Angelou's tragic childhood. Enjoy. We'll have to
look. We'll play it on Monday. If we want to keep giving that guy any attention.
Maya Angelou. Yeah. Circus. Awesome segue music. Who was that? Go ahead, Michael.
That was Protege and Chronix.
Yorick Hunt. Yorick, okay. How many times has a hammer or a knife or a car, when properly used for the purpose they were designed, killed someone a block away? How many accidental hammerings or knifings happen yearly? It's useless arguing evidence or facts with these people. This is a religion. Why don't we just call these people what they are, gun worshippers?
I think that's what Cliff and I were starting to get to, though.
Oh, no, of course. Yeah. This is something we've been saying for a long time. This is simply part, it's another part of the checklist of a cultural ID.
Yeah.
And it is, you don't, skiers are not like this. You people who have another hobby are just not like this.
Yes.
And this has become This has been adopted as a cultural ID. It is part of the business plan for the NRA and for the gun manufacturers to make it a cultural touchstone, because this is they know it coincides with a group of people who feel like they're under siege by, you know, the gays and the Browns and the, yep, you know, whatever it is. It is more of a cultural touchstone than anything else. And that's why they're running out of these things.
I like thinking of it as a two-track approach, though, because there is exactly what Sam's saying. And then the other just base bottom line about this issue, same with climate. It's a cultural touchstone issue and all of that. But then it's like there is just an unethical industry that could care less about the public good. And they'll use anything at their disposal to keep slinging their products. And that is the bottom line. That's the only reason because if that industry's support wasn't there, these people's cultural identities would not be strong enough to overturn common sense gun legislation. The bottom line is the industry.
Appreciate the chuckle. When was the last time someone committed mass murder with a car? Hariah Pop Phil, there was a law that required the therapist this kid saw where they were required to report them to the local police. It was not done. I didn't hear about that. Interesting.
He was checked in by the local police, though.
That was after his mom called, after seeing his videos.
And the new report today is that the police knew of these videos but did not watch them. So there's a lot of questions about that.
In his manifesto, actually, those videos were up. And when those videos first went up, that was the original time frame he wanted to do his day of retribution or whatever.
Right.
And then he chose to push it back, and when people, which gave people more time to see these videos.
Right.
And then when the cops showed up, he took the videos down.
Jesus.
What you know, if you go through that timeline, there were a couple of times where he had planned this day of retribution. One of the times that he didn't do is because he got a cold.
Yes.
Literally.
Yes.
The other times were because whatever, he got visited by the cops.
His dad might have been home from overseas, and he didn't want to go. He didn't want to do it while his dad was home because he originally planned to go to his dad's house and kill his stepmom. And if his dad was there, he said he would not be able to do it.
What's amazing is you think of all these different things that prevented him from doing it at any point, and one of those things was absolutely not his ability to get a gun.
Yeah.
Never a consideration.
Yeah. Pirates of Destiny. Funny how the people behind the NRA use the idea of an armed citizenry regulating government tyranny, yet also provide arms to the state at a massively greater capacity. Yeah. Sam Cedar, running 5 minutes late. That was from before. Yeah. Just fun, right? I gotta read all the IMs. Cruiser. Street of Shame is fantastic, and if the he said it, Matt Fum Guy said it, I can't say it, retrospective is still going on, you should saddle up. Also has an incredibly weird theremin score. Is streaming on Hulu Plus if you are subscribed. P.S. I refuse to watch Game of Thrones, but Mad Men is empirically and scientifically superior. I don't know about that.
Oh, Matt, Mad Men, I'm pretty underwhelmed by that show.
Kevin11721, welcome to Westeros. Now try reading the books and see how much they cut out, turning 1,000 pages into 10 to 20 hours of video. The audiobooks are very well made also. Regarding establishing characters, HBO compressed the books tremendously. The books are mammoth literary accomplishments. Yeah, but I think they're doing an incredible job, because it'd be impossible to actually...
And the truth is, like, I'm not going to read those books.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Teacher Lauren. Oh man, I've read the books and I know what's going to happen. We're going to need to do a Game of Thrones recap on Monday's Fun Half. Oh boy, now I'm...
Well, we'll do that. We could do a few of those. There's only a couple left. That's a good idea.
Militant Apathy. Sam should debate Stefan Meunier again. This time he should connect the dots with the crazy libertarian anti-government stuff and the misogyny that he preaches. I don't know. We'll see.
It's a long life.
Jay Tingle, perennial babyface Matt Bender, it's Bender, by the way, whines, it's good to be the heel. Four away in the world of comedy. He's just throwing out random sentences. So you don't know if your radio program will be rebroadcast in Hartman's SiriusXM slot? Sam just said he's not sure yet. Right?
No, I don't know. I don't.
This happens so fast.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is, it's pretty crazy that we're getting it up like this. You know, more often than not, an existing show falls into a slot like that. I really don't know. I mean, I don't even know, frankly, if you ask me right now what stations you're going to be on, I wouldn't know. All I know is I got literally about 5,000 emails over the past 2 days from people who I don't know who they are. And I'm caught on these email chains. And, you know, I just want to focus on the show. So as far as I know, I'm supposed to be talking in front of a microphone at 3 p.m.
It's going
to
be a good show. Yes. As information comes out, you will always be the first to know.
You're going to get Sam for
And by you mean Jay Tingle.
Yeah, personally, Jay Tingle. I'm going to start just tweeting you with every single detail, down to, like, what water company they're using.
Jay Tingle continues, why is Jimmy Reaver Cake singing with a cartoon Italian accent? The Matt and Mike Warm Leatherette song makes me want to dance. It's all about the show for Sam. Cadet, the celebrity guest is a man. I thought it would be Janine Garofalo. Oh, this must be before you showed up. We promoted you as a celebrity guest. Horse Zachary, oh, thought the mystery guest was going to be John Benjamin. Who do you think we know these people? I mean, me and Michael are going to pull strings and get John Benjamin in studio. Sam can't even get John Benjamin in studio.
Yeah, I can get him to text me something obnoxious. Oh, here. Oh, should we do one of those?
Yes. Let's do a random John Benjamin text.
John Benjamin text. I received it this morning at 9:58 a.m. The last time we texted with each other was... What's today? The 30th?
Today's the 30th.
May 30th.
Okay, the last time we texted was May 28th. And this morning, May 30th, he says, well?
Good. Good for John.
It's apropos of nothing.
Shank Steel, will Sam's show be on the tune in Progressive Channel?
Yes, that I know.
Oh, okay.
It will be on Progressive Voices.
We do have information. Boom. There you go. Frederick Con College, cheer some soul. Wow. Whoa, 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 whoa. Let's not insult sending Sam to Korean spas. There's no shame in doing so. Going to Jim Jill Bang, there's wonders for stress relief. We were making fun of the spa. We were just making fun of Sam's
I went to
time.
Spa Castle once.
Yes. I did not, but Michael did. Kevman.
Hell yeah.
Hey, Matt and Mike. Great job guest hosting the show this week. Also, two questions about your new show. Well, it's not my new show. Where can I find the video stream? We don't know yet.
We're going to try to get it on our YouTube channel. We'll keep you posted, but that's the goal.
That's the goal.
Will the Libertarian Challenge extend to your new show?
You know, probably not. I mean, I certainly, you know, I'll take phone calls, but... You know, I don't have the same amount of time. You know, the longest segment, I think, is like 8 or 9 minutes.
Sam, I hate women. I love gold, and I don't believe in the federal government. Sir, could you call me on my podcast? I think that you would fit a lot better in the master's format.
Well, it usually takes them about 15 minutes to say black people can't go to their restaurant. Yeah. So
unless you can expedite saying slavery should come back within 30 seconds, sir, this is not going to work in this format.
I mean, contemplate. Okay, this is the way I look at it. 8-minute-long segment right before you're up against a break for the commercial. Assume they don't call in the first. So they call around like minute two, so you got 6 minutes left.
Right.
Then assume 2.5 minutes of, I'm sorry, I can't hear you. What is what's going on with your phone? So then you have 3.5 minutes, and that just gives them time to say something to the effect of like, you know, if we just knew that the car blew up, we would just be able to afford cheaper cars. Well, folks, we got to take a break. We'll be right back after this.
I just got to say, there's this great NPR host in Boston. Obviously, they have more time. This guy, Tom Ashbrook, and, you know, he's NPR, so he can't really show his perspective. But what he always does is anytime he gets a really – and it's always a right-wing caller. I mean, his biases are kind of clear. But he'll just be like – and he's Midwestern. He goes, don't exactly follow what you're saying there, Jason, but thanks for the call. That's like always his tell. It's like, don't exactly know where you're going with it, but thanks for the perspective.
The DX Fool. Hi, isn't the new show an excuse for Mike Papantonio to pre-record interviews for the weekend Ring of Fire now that he can no longer sub for Ed Schultz? Also, maybe Sam should plan for Myla's bar mitzvah now.
Pap and Bobby will hopefully be on the program with some regularity, but they're not going to be on the show.
This is not Ring of Fire Radio. This is Ring of Fire Radio with Sam Cedar.
Yeah, I mean, the weekday show is different. I mean, the idea was that we want to expand that brand because it and sort of build off that because it already is on terrestrial radio, and it was a way of basically, you know, I think it helped in terms of getting clearances. So, you know, because there's some familiarity there. So, no on the first, and preparing Myla for her bat mitzvah now, you know, okay.
Yeah, when Sam's at probably his busiest ever right now, when he's actually putting it all together.
I literally have timed what I'm doing. I have a note for myself to time, because I'm going to go to the new studio after this, to time how long it takes me to stop off at that dollar pizza place en route to see if I can swing that so I can get to the next studio.
But don't get another, like don't get another pizza, though. All right.
I won't get a second.
Okay, please.
Dr. Radmanthes, congrats to Sam on the new show, Break a Leg. I love the alarm clock sound on the Eminem song. Like, the creator just assumes all the listeners are rolling out of bed when MR starts. Ronald Reagan. So Marin did a whole show with Vince Vaughn and didn't even bring up his relationship with Glenn Beck. Thoughts?
I haven't heard the Vince Vaughn thing, but he's a rabid right winger.
Yes.
And yeah, I mean, you know, Marin didn't want to go there. And that's definitely on my list to give him crap about.
Nathan Ray. Hey, Eminem. Leo Laporte from Twit TV interacts with his viewers, listeners during the breaks in his Tech Guy show, though he has a chat room, not IM system. One cultural touchstone for the freedom-loving peeps is the no helmets on motorbikes movement, though they only kill themselves. Yeah, but that movement isn't really, like, that's, yeah, like you said. The International Herald, Camper Van Beethoven tonight in Portland, Oregon.
Wow, oh, that's cool.
Yeah. Rose 6200, can you imagine if the right to a horse were written in the Constitution, which now would be a car that you couldn't regulate? The Second Amendment is the problem. Okajik. Hi, guys. I was going to call in regarding guns and gun control, but looks like time is limited, so I'll try to call in Monday. Michael, you were going to provide some insight into being homeschooled. That will be Monday now, too. The homeschoolers I know are libertarian and don't want their kids getting brainwashed. Why were you homeschooled, and how did you turn out progressive? You'll definitely
talk about it on Monday.
We're really running out of time now. Sam, I still want to take you out for a beer, perhaps to celebrate your new show. Again, that'll have to be on Monday. No, I'm just,
who's that from?
Okajik.
Okay, yeah, I mean, I have less time to do that now, but I'm always open to it to the extent
future.
That I have. Yes. Future.
Future.
Well, but if a listener again, we
wants
had
to take
an
Matt
amazing.
And Michael
out for... No, all, the listener who had us, who we went out on a Japanese meal on him. That was like the best thing that ever happened. And if that's a good idea, if somebody wants to do that.
Yeah. I'll good one there, there, Michael. But I agree. By the way,
God, I'm gone for like 2 days, and this thing just turns into a shill fest.
By the way, my dad is a colleague of Zephyr Teachout at Fordham, constitutional scholar and legal historian. Would be good for you to talk to him sometime. Zephyr Teachout, you want to talk to him?
Yeah. Send an email.
To my dad?
No.
I get it. Send the email.
The listener wants you to talk to his dad.
Okay.
Ilmek.
Talk to all your dads, whatever. No problem.
That Club Eminem song is strange and hilarious, but I can get used to it. Best celebrity guest ever. Oh, you're the best celebrity guest ever, Sam.
Wow, thank you. That's great. It's always great to be a guest on your own show.
Buggy, only Game of Thrones recap required is Funny or Die's Gay of Thrones. Effing hilarious. We'll have to check it out. Kenny Pick, what's all this talk about Spock asshole? What? I have no idea what you're talking about. Chimp Evil 666. Hey, if Jay Tingle, what kind of name is that anyway? Gets personal updates. I want them too. So what about podcasting for the new show? Will it be integrated with the MR membership, with the Ring of Fire membership? Let me give you my cell and you can text me.
Say that again? Sorry.
Will the new show be integrated with the MR membership or with the Ring of Fire membership or what?
I don't know what you mean by integrated. I mean, the
podcast of the radio show will come through. If there is a podcast, the radio show will go through Ring of Fire, right?
None of this stuff has been worked out. I think it's more likely that it will go through Ring of Fire as it exists, but in some ways it's a separate entity from even the weekend show. I don't know how that's going to happen. I do know that if I take IMs, what I'm going to do after this is go over there and try and set up my Adium account so that I can take IMs from the app. So the app is going to be very useful in the context of the new show.
Lenny, Sam, spotted you on Court Street in Brooklyn pushing a stroller this past Sunday. True?
Court Street in Brooklyn pushing a stroller Sunday. What was Sunday?
I don't know. There's not many guys with 5 o'clock shadow and black rimmed glasses.
Yeah, I think
Brooklyn.
That was the case. Was there other people with me? I don't think I was alone. Wait a second. Was I alone with Saul on Court Street?
Yeah. Yeah, you were.
I think I was.
Yeah.
Hold on. I'll get back to you. Let me just I'm going to check the map where if I was down there.
C. McDonald, congrats, Sam. Good luck next week. Regarding TV, Stephanie Miller and Tom Hartman are on Free Speech TV.
That more than likely cannot happen. I mean, I have because soon, theoretically, I mean, I think because of the MSNBC
still
situation,
MSNBC.
I can't
do it. Yeah. Right. Don't forget about that.
Jeez, you're a busy guy.
Oh, God.
Kenny Pick, Spa Castle sounds like Spock asshole. Dumb joke. If you had the context there, we read the IMs late, after we talk about something. So you have to add context in your IMs. Shank Steele, please, Michael. Right wing Mandela Hawking, super male vitality for Alex Jones. Actually,
Monday.
Can we really quickly get Right Wing Mandela promoting, telling everyone to listen to Sam Cedar's new show on Monday?
If you must expose yourself to an exhausted, communist, overextended, depleted, and pizza-consuming father who will give you on a daily basis liberal talking points, regurgitated whining and complaining about Andrew Cuomo's already socialist agenda, then find him on the dying medium of terrestrial radio that Ed Schultz has already fled from due to his own higher business acumen. Find Sam Cedar on your AM dial.
One of the problems that Sam Cedar is going to face is he's going to have to deal with the incredible amount of attempt by the One World jackbooted thugs, and nothing can help him more than the new InfoWars Power Aid.
Hi, this is friend of the show, Nelson Mandela. All you know that I disagree profoundly with Sam Cedar's retrograde, communist, multiculturalist, homosexual agenda advancing politics. But as a friend, and I look at an exhausted man filled with estrogen, not able to sleep, not able to perform, but yet exhausting and overextending himself so he can talk endlessly about liberal politics, I as a friend would recommend to him the new super male vitality formula from Alex Jones and InfoWars Living. This formula has allowed me to survive through my stay in Robben Island. And it can do the same for me. It can do the same for Sam. Buy Superman Vitality for Sam. It won't turn him into a real man because he's committed to...
Nelson, this is completely impromptu. Is that not right? I mean, I didn't...
Alex, this could not have been more fun.
Problems with your one-world communist worldview. But this is completely impromptu. We both happened to walk into the same cafe.
I had literally just been addressing a group on the assault of men in modern society, and I walked into a cafe to get coffee, and I ran into you and giving you the opportunity to tell me how Supermal Vitality has changed my life, totally spontaneous. There is a before and after picture that I have taken myself on my own, of my own accord. We have in no way planned or coordinated this, and I can say Providence is very much looking upon us this day.
I would recommend
that Sam immediately order 2 caseloads of this, or he will literally collapse in the middle of Midtown and look like a street urchin by Penn Station if he does not immediately stop consuming this product.
I don't know that I'll make it all the way down to Penn Station.
I feel like it would be wrong to not cap that off with just a constitution.
We gotta wrap this up.
Horace Zachary, Majority Report Shill Fest. Maybe you can get Reefer Cake to write a theme song for that. Jay Tingle, it's all about the, you ignore my tweets, Michael. Sam, will you be shilling some brand of gold like Hartman?
You know, it was funny. when they came to me, the thing I said, am I going to have to sell gold? And they said, well, I mean, you know.
It's possible.
Everybody else does. And I said, you know, I don't. That's not, I don't want to do that. You know, you don't have to say that the world is going to end. you can just say that it would be diversify your portfolio. And I said, you know, I don't think so. So, I mean, you know, look, the bottom line is I don't know how much revenue I'm going to make off this. And, you know, and part of it is because I have a reluctance to do, you know,
Gold.
Hi, this is Nelson Mandela, friend of the show and friend of Ring of Fire with Sam Cedar.
Maybe you do it
as
like
we
that,
continue
yeah.
to follow the policies that
Maybe
Sam advocates.
Maybe I'll do it.
Yeah.
You've got to buy gold. The gold we're selling on this is essentially like the male vitality formula, but in solid form.
Kevin's 11-7-21.
When I say the male vitality formula is like pure gold, what I'm really saying is that the pure gold is like a hardened male vitality formula.
Kevin's 11-7-21. Sam, it's pretty crazy. Crazy this is happening. In fact, it might be a mistake. It was in quotes. I don't know. Appreciate the chuckle. High five. Right Wing Mandela promo is awesome. Nailed it. And Yorick Hunt with the final I Am of the Day.
I just like to say Yorick.
Well, you've never been able to get to pick that up?
Well,
it's fine. Go ahead.
What if this poor guy's name is actually Yorick, Mr. Hunt?
Well, then I refer to him as Yorick. That's his first name.
You're Yuri for me.
I try to make it sound like we have a huge international audience.
Let's just do a little BB for okay. a second. For the,
it's very important for you to diversify your portfolio in the event that you need to quickly gain funds to repress a people that are living in their land. They said, build a new barrier wall. I said, okay, here's the shovel to build it. I'm holding nothing. They said, where's the shovel? I said, this is the point, my friend. You need to buy gold because we are running out of money. That's right. We don't... You can corner the market on the water, but if you don't have the land to grow something, just buy gold. It's better.
I should have said another IM because this is not how we should end the show. But correct me here, but I think the Tarasov law prevents mental health professionals from disclosing any murderous intent arising in therapy sessions unless the victim is named or the patient has the capability of carrying it out.
I don't know if that's exactly true. I think when it, I think when it's
happy
physical...
now. No, but pick it up on Monday. We gotta go.
All right, folks. Matt and Mike show on Monday. Sam Cedar will debut the Ring of Fire Radio with Sam Cedar show on Monday after this show at 3 p.m. We will give you all the details that we know on Monday, and then Sam is back here at the Majority Report on Tuesday. Have a good weekend.
It might take all the strength I got to get to where I want, but I know somehow I'm gonna get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught between the truth and the light bar, but finding out won't make me feel any better. Yeah, I know are gonna kick in, and my pilot light shining bright. I guess I'm where the choice is made, for the option where you don't get paid, for the road that bends before it finally breaks you. I guess I'm where I lost my drive between the 101 and the 5. Know how far the detour takes you. Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in, and my pilot light shining bright. Friday.